Yesterday evening, to celebrate Halloween, I was over at some friends' houses to have some dinner and a bonfire, and we decided that since it was Halloween, we were going to watch a movie. Now, I don't know how many of you remember this movie. Way back in 1982, John Carpenter's movie, The Thing. Any of you ever remember watching that movie called The Thing? Yeah, it's one of these. Okay, so we have a couple. So it's this... The basic premise of this story is that some random alien ship about 100,000 years ago went off course and found its way sucked into the atmosphere of the Earth, and it crash-landed in Antarctica, and it became frozen under the ice. But then in 1982, some random Norwegian scientists sort of stumbled upon this ship, uncovered it, and uncovered this frozen alien. And as it turns out, this alien, which was frozen for 100,000 years, was not actually dead, just kind of not able to move, and it needed to retain its warmth in order to be able to stay alive. But this alien was a shapeshifter, which is why they called it The Thing. And the only way that it was able to stay alive was kind of like by being a parasite. It had to attach itself onto some living organism. It would kind of take over that living organism, and then it would be able to morph itself into that organism so that it would not be known or seen as an alien. It would be seen as whatever thing it took over. And then, of course, these American scientists also stumble upon this thing, and the whole movie is about them trying to defend themselves against this alien, but they don't know. They don't know where the alien is, because it could be any of the living things around them. It could be one of them. It could be their husky dogs. And so there's this, it's a really interesting movie as well, because it shows you the glory of special effects before there was such a thing as CGI, right? So they do a really good job of making this alien, this shape-shifting, morphing alien, really ugly and gross and horrifying. To just kind of, you know, give you the heebie-jeebies when you looked at it. You're like, ah, I can't watch it. So I was, why am I mentioning all that? It's All Saints Day. What does that have to do with anything? I don't know. Actually, I do. Here's my thought. The celebration of All Saints, right? We know that the celebration of All Saints is the celebration of all those who are currently in heaven enjoying God. And this much we know, that for all who are in heaven, they have attained the destiny of every human soul. And it's been described to us by the ancient fathers in this way, that if we were to see, even right now, the saints in their glory, our brothers and sisters in heaven, if they were to be shown to us right now in all of their glory, they would be so sublimely beautiful and extraordinary that we would be tempted to worship them as gods and goddesses. The ancient Christian fathers used this language to describe the destiny of the human race. The destiny of the human race, which is to share in the very divine nature of God. Now think about this. Every second of every day of your life, you and I are surrounded by the invisible world. God created all things visible. God created also all things invisible. And even in this moment, every time we gather to celebrate Mass, invisibly present to us right here and right now is the entire multitude of heaven. All of the angels, all of the saints are invisibly surrounding us right now. We can't see them with our own eyes because they are invisible. Nonetheless, they are here. And for us to kind of understand the meaning of that, the full import of that, we have to do what Jesus does in the gospel, and even what St. John speaks about in the first reading, the book of Revelation, and in the second reading, one of his letters to the early Christian communities. To become a saint is our end. It's our destiny. For us to know our destiny, Jesus suggests to us, go back to the beginning. In order to know your end, you have to be able to know your beginning. You have to be able to go back to the beginning. And so think again then from the opening lines of the book of Genesis that says this: when God created all things, he created man, created mankind, man and woman, in his image and in his likeness. Those aren't just sort of vague descriptions. Those are actually really precise attributes that are being communicated to mankind. To be made in the image of God means that we reflect the persons of the Trinity, means that we have a memory, the seat of our identity, that we have an intellect to know what is true, and that we have a free will to do what is good. In this way, we are in the image of God, because God knows himself, understands himself, enjoys himself. God is his identity. He is the knowledge of his own truth. He is the love with which he loves himself. We reflect that by being his image. But we were also made in God's likeness, which means this: that when God looked at us at the beginning of creation in our original holiness, all of those capacities in us to remember God, to understand truth, and to do the good, all of those powers were filled to brimming over. They were perfect. They were totally. God looked upon mankind and saw his reflection perfectly without blemish. Now, in the fall of mankind, in the first sin of Adam and Eve, what remained to us was the image of God, but what was lost to us was the likeness of God. So what was filled to overflowing to the brim was now somehow half shattered, no longer full. There was something within us that remained of God. We still are able to remember, to know, to have identity. To some extent, we still have the truth capable within us. We still are able to do the good in some limited way, but not in a way that God has created us. And so how does Jesus reflect on this? How does his apostle, St. John, reflect on this in the scriptures that we heard? Listen again here, specifically to this part in the second reading, where St. John says this: "Beloved, see what love the Father has bestowed on us, that we are called his children, and we are God's children. And what we shall be has not yet been revealed. But we do know that when it is revealed, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is." John is speaking about our end by speaking about our beginning. In our original creation, we were not only the image of God, but we were like him. And being like God, in other words, standing before God in justice, in holiness, in perfection, in perfect conformity, we were able to see God as he is. This was lost to us in the fall, which is why you and I can no longer see the invisible world. We cannot see the invisible world because we have lost the likeness of God. And why, in a fallen world, we have this grace called faith, which is the knowledge of things that are unseen, by which we attain what we truly hope for in God's promises. So though we cannot see the invisible, when we are made like God again, what is invisible now will be revealed to us, and we will see reality as it truly is. This is extraordinary, and this is sublime, and this is the true weight of human destiny. Your human destiny was to be able to witness what is invisible, the glory of what now cannot be seen. And not only to be able to have a vision of it, but to participate in it to such a high degree of glory that at our present state, we would be tempted to worship ourselves if we saw what we were truly made to be. It's that beautiful. And in this journey of faith, this nighttime of faith as it is described, we have these very deep-seated hopes and dreams and aspirations of what mankind can be. And we also have these very deep-seated fears of what man can fail to be. Why is it that a movie like The Thing is so scary? What was the fear? The fear was that each character in that story was literally going to be taken over by this alien and transformed into this disgusting blob that destroys them, this horror. And that's what kind of compels the plot line. But there's actually something really theological in that very movie, which, although it's a fiction, speaks to something very deep. Because in the end, every human soul ends up at one location or the other. They end up as this thing, this everlasting horror, or they end up as this, as it were, divine god or goddess. Which language we kind of use in an imaginative way, right? We're not idolaters. We don't worship creatures. We don't worship each other. But the truth is so sublime that we use language that can be kind of paradoxical. That God became man so that man might become God. That what is to God in his nature, we come to the same by sharing through his grace. And so this is true, right? Whenever we celebrate the solemnity of All Saints, we celebrate what has been accomplished. We celebrate what is possible and what has been done in the lives of the souls of many of our brothers and sisters who have gone before us. And this then presents to you and to me the nugget, the crux of it, which is that your destiny as a human person is never what is in question. You are destined to be something everlastingly glorious. The only question is, do you and I choose to rise to our destiny? And this is what is so perilous and beautiful at the same time, that by God's grace we can rise to our destiny, or by our own failings we can choose to fall from our destiny. We know what God's gone for, and we know deep in our hearts what each of us has been made for. And God, in his goodness to us, gives us grace, not only through his direct power, but also because he desires each of us to participate in interceding for each other. And so this communion of saints, these brothers and sisters who know what it is to see God as he is, it has been revealed to them what it truly means to be a child of God. How much do you think that they desire that for us? More than we could possibly imagine. And so every day of your life, heaven prays for you. At no moment of your earthly existence ever are you abandoned. You are always being prayed for, always. Not only by the human heart of Christ, but also by the human hearts of your brothers and sisters of the human race. And this gives us great confidence that even in this nighttime of faith, though we cannot see the invisible, we know it to be the most real and the most lasting. And so we train our eyes, we train our hearts, not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Because we know that what is seen is passing, but what is unseen is eternal. That is glorious. And that is what we pray for in this Holy Mass this day.